on the next day.
Right now, we'd like to welcome a lady that I've known for many years. She's originally from over by Clear Lake, South Dakota. And she's written many books, including a biography of Farron Young called Live Fast, Love Hard. I think that's the title. And Farron had a record back in the 50s called Live Fast, Love Hard, Die Young. So she left the third part out of the title there, appropriately. And then she also wrote a book about Marty Robbins called 20th Century Drifter. Both of these are wonderful biographies of country music stars, the greatest country music stars from that time period. And she's won a wonderful author. Her book about Marty Robbins actually won a national award last year. So let's make her welcome here to tell you about some of her memories of country music and the books she has written. She has them available down here, and she's also written some other books as well. She'll tell you about them. Diane Dykeman.
Good afternoon. I was in Japan when Farron Young committed suicide in 1996. I was stationed with the U.S. Navy. I was sitting in my room one night reading a book and listening to Armed Forces radio, and I heard an announcement that country music singer Farron Young had shot himself and wasn't expected to live. And, well, that was shocking, and I didn't know what to do, so I called his house knowing nobody would be there and left a message on his recorder and said I hoped he would make it through okay. And over the next couple of days I checked the news, which wasn't a whole lot, and obviously I couldn't get anything from all the Japanese television stations. And everything that was in English was about the O.J. Simpson trial. When a couple of days later I saw in the Star and Stripes magazine that Farron had died. And during my time over there, I started thinking about writing books as a retirement career, and I was working on two memoirs at the time about my Navy career and about growing up on a farm by Clear Lake. And I decided I'd like to write the biography of Farron Young, and I thought how neat it would be to talk to all these singers that I had grown up listening to all my life, and everybody who knew Farron had stories to tell about it. So when I transferred to Los Angeles in 1999, one weekend I bought a plane ticket and flew to Nashville, and I had three possibilities to look up, and then it worked out. I called Ralph Emery, and he was kind enough to come to my hotel and talk to me for about an hour and gave me some advice, and he told me that once I got a publisher, he would let me have copies of the interviews that he had done with Farron for his radio show. And I went to Farron's office and talked to his manager, Billy Beaton, and he talked a lot, but it was off the record. He wouldn't let me interview him. He said he was saving his stories for when he wrote a memoir of his years with Farron. As it turns out, he should have let me interview him because then his stories would have been in my book, and as far as I know, he never did write a book before he died. Then I went to the Music City News office, and that was a magazine that Farron had started back in the early 60s, and they were busy working on their next issue, and they let me go through all the archives and look at all the photos. And I got back to L.A. and checked their website and found out the magazine had been closed. It had folded. And I think that must have been as much of a shock to the staff as it was to me, because they certainly didn't get any indications of that while I was there. I picked 2007 as my publication date because I thought that was far enough in the future that people wouldn't always be asking me, well, are you done yet? Is it published yet? And it would give me some time to figure out how to write a biography. And also that would be Farron's 75th birthday, so I thought that was a good year. I didn't know anything about writing a biography. I didn't have any publishing contacts. I didn't have any music contacts. I just started plugging away and making phone calls and such. And one weekend, my sister and I went down to Shreveport, Louisiana to do research Farron's childhood. and there we attended a birthday party and Amy had a birthday party and book signing for him and Frank. So he and Sarah had both been on the Ruby and Hayride, and both were in West Coast band back in the early days. And he had a band and a bunch of singers up there, and I thought, well, how great that would be. When I was there in the book signing party, I would want to have the Country Deputies band perform. And even though at the time I didn't even know who they were, I only knew the names of about four band members, and didn't know how to find any of them. And then on one of our research trips to Nashville, my sister and I were, I was trying to get in touch with Ed Gregory, who had bought the Serendipity, because when Sarah died, he put in his will that he did not want his children dividing up his things. He wanted everything to be sold, and his kids would divide up the money. And so Ed Gregory had bought his estate. So it's hard to get in touch with him, but finally I did. He said, well, I have 15 minutes this afternoon if you want to come by my office. So we did, and we waited to get in to see him. And then when we got in there, the place was stuffed. So there was one empty chair, and I sat in that. And he cleaned out the place down to the sofa for a chair, he said. And then he sat down behind his desk, and he said, how can I help you? And I said, well, I'm a Navy captain, and I'm writing the biography of Darren Young. And he said, you're a Navy captain? And then Taylor said, I'm a retired Navy senior chief. And he said, you're retired Navy? So he gets out from behind his chair, and from behind his desk, and goes and cleans up the space on the couch next to Taylor, and sits down by her, and we talk for about an hour then. And he was a tremendous help. He took us to the Opry and backstage and introduced us to a bunch of people and said she's writing Sarah's biography. And I got interviewed out of that and met a bunch of them. They invited us down to the Florida State Fair in Tampa, and we hung around backstage and I met a lot of people there and did a lot of interviews, so I really appreciated him. At the beginning, because I had no credibility and nobody knew who I was, I used my Navy captainness for credibility. I hoped that people would think that somebody who had gotten that far, the equivalent of a full-blooded Army colonel, would have some reliability and that you could count on her to actually write a book if she said she was going to. So after I retired from the Navy, I spent the entire year of 2005 finishing up the book and finding a publisher. And I wanted people who knew Sarah to read the manuscript, so I contacted Bill Mack, the nighttime news jockey at Fort Worth, and he agreed to read it, and Glenn Sutton, songwriter at Nashville. And then I got a call from Robin Young, Sarah's son, and by this time I had met Sarah's ex-wife, Elden, I'd met three of his four kids. And Robin called and said, he was doing an interview with Bill Mack, and Bill said, well, what do you think of that book that's being written about your daddy? And he said, well, you know more about it than I do. You've read it, and she hasn't let me read it. And so I told him the reason that I hadn't wanted the family involved is because I didn't want people to read the book and think, oh, well, this is what the family allowed her to say, or these are the things the family approved of. But I told Robin I did agree that it would be a good idea for him, and he would be getting questions, and he could talk about the book then. So I sent him the manuscript. It wasn't the same manuscript I got published, because I later had to cut 13 words out of it. But in the first one, I had an entire chapter that about Sarah's high school girlfriend that Carol Wick had written about 28 pages for me to use for research material. And Robin called me and he said, I learned so much from reading that. He said, the way our dad acted wasn't our fault. He said, you know, we've always wondered what did we do wrong that had been treated family so mean, and what could we do different? He says, now I realize that dad was like that even as a teenager. And I said, yeah, so abusers always blame their victims, and they say, it's your fault, I did something. So I, as I revised the manuscript, I added a second target audience to it. My first one, of course, was the people who wanted to read about their and country music history, but I also hope people read it, they will see themselves or family members on the issues of alcoholic abuse and drunken driving and depression and suicide threats and all those kinds of things, and that families have to, those who are victims of abuse have to realize it's not their fault and the person's not going to change and they need to do something to get some help. So I hope people who see themselves or family members in that story will seek help and not have to live the way Aaron and his family did for so many years. That book was published, we had a book release party in November 2007 at the Ernestown Record Shop in Nashville, and it had a country deputy reunion. It was fronted by Daryl McCall, who'd been a country deputy in the early 1960s, and some of the band members had been with Aaron when the band ended in the early 90s. So the band members spanned 30 years. Some of them had not met each other before, and they had never played together before, and they didn't even have a practice session. They drove songs, and they went live on WSM radio on the internet that night and did the show. That was a wonderful evening. My sister Taylor and I and my two daughters went to Nashville for that. And then in 2012, I published 20th Century Drifter, the life of Marty Robbins. I've been watching a Marty Robbins spotlight story with Aaron as a guest, and I realized that Marty, I was a fan of his too, and I thought he had a wonderful story with music history and his NASCAR and his combat in the Navy in the South Pacific during World War II, and that I'd like to write his biography. And the University of Illinois Press, which had picked up Aaron's story, when they heard I was writing Marty's, they said, well, we want to publish that one too. So that book release party was held in at the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2012, and by then I was living in Sioux Falls, so my sister Taylor and my sweetheart Harry and I drove down to Nashville for that. And Marty's two kids, Ronnie and Janet, both came, and Ronnie sang El Paso, and he was backed by the harmony was done by Joe Babcock and Jim Blazer, and Jim and Joe told me that was the first time they had sung together in 50 years. So that was a pretty good event, and I had to go back to Nashville last year because Marty Robbins' book won the Belmont Award for the Best Country Music Book of 2012, so I went back and accepted that award. And Sherwin Linton is a big Marty Robbins fan, and when we had talked while I was writing that book, he was a member of Marty's Army. He had a whole stack of fan club newsletters that he let me borrow that helped me in writing the book, so I certainly appreciate that. And then he invited me here today to talk to all of you, and I appreciate that. And I thank Sherwin, and I thank all of you for being here today to listen. So enjoy the meeting.
I'd like to match my applause for our good friend Diane Dutton. This is her book on Marty Robbins, and she's also got a beautiful book on Aaron Young. And she'll be right down here and have them available for sale, and be happy to autograph them for you as well. And she's also got the other book, one of my other books here, Don't Feel It, isn't it?
I have my two memoirs, A Farm in the Hollywood, about growing up on a farm by South Dakota, by Clear Lake, South Dakota, and then Navy Green Shirt, which is about 18 years of my career as an aircraft maintenance officer in the Navy.
All right. So be sure, if you don't come up here right now, come up here after our show and visit with Diane, and just, you don't have to buy a book, but take a look at it. A wonderful author and a country music fan, number one. Thank you very much, Diane. She'll be back with us talking a little bit again during our Johnny Cash interview on the 4th.